Welcome to the Warrior Health Podcast with your host, Dr. Adam Splaver.
Hello, this is Dr. Adam Splaver, and this is the Warrior Health Podcast. And today, I have a special guest with us, Dr. Ariel Grobman. He is an otolaryngologist, otherwise known as an ENT, fancy word. And today, we're going to talk about actually nasal breathing, because the nose knows. Ariel, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I thought it would be interesting to talk about nasal breathing because so many of us realize that we need to breathe every single day. So what better person to talk to about it than ENT? So, Ariel, can you tell us a little bit about the anatomy of how the nose is important in breathing?
Absolutely. So we all have noses. It's a very important organ for a lot of reasons. They come in a variety of shapes and sizes, as you know, but they all function in a similar fashion. The point is, filter out the particles that are in the environment, humidify the air, and get the odorants or the smell in and to the brain.
Well, isn't it true, though, also, by the way, your nose and smell is very important in taste?
Correct. Yeah. We see in people who lose their sense of smell from trauma or from, disease processes, they don't appreciate food as well as the rest of us.
So the nose is more than just a breathing apparatus. It's actually instrumental in helping you enjoy your gustatory, experiences.
Absolutely. The best foodies, the best sommeliers, they probably need very well-tuned noses and smell abilities.
So it's interesting. There are people out there that breathe through their mouth. There are people that breathe through their nose. There are people who breathe through both. What are the benefits? Why do you think it's better to breathe through your nose than through your mouth?
So a lot of studies have shown the benefits of nasal breathing versus just oral breathing alone. A lot of that has to do with the functions of the nose. So if you were to bypass the nose, you would be bypassing this beautiful air humidification system. We all know, by going into dry environments versus in more moist environments, what breathing in dry air feels like. But not just feels like, we're also used to getting this really nice humidified air, and that helps our overall lung health. And there's many benefits such as improved ability to tolerate exercises, improved ability to actually maintain a nice slow respiratory rate, and a heart rate. So a lot of studies on exercise, for example, have shown a lot of benefits from nasal breathing.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up with exercise because I found that breathing itself is something actually you have to train yourself to do properly when you're exercising, depending on what you're doing, whether you're doing, from cardiovascular to actual weightlifting to swimming. I mean, all these different activities require a different type of breathing. So what are the effects of proper nasal breathing during exercise?
So that's a great point you made. And it's a point that I think a lot of people are not really aware of until they maybe go to a yoga class and they start stressing deep yoga breathing and trying to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. And it's often overlooked. So for example, we end up operating on a lot of treating and sometimes operating on a lot of athletes, and they find that their performance is boosted when they're breathing. So some of the actual physiologic effects of good nasal breathing are: one, ability to slow down the expiratory phase of, respiration and ventilation. Just basically, it helps regulate your respiratory rate. And as anyone knows who's been in, let's say, a fight or flight scenario where, you're running away from a leopard or a cheetah versus, being on a basketball court and chasing down a fast break, you need to know that maintaining your respiratory rate is very important for your overall performance in terms of getting oxygen into your body and into your brain and performing the best you can. So maintaining your rate is great. And also for lung health, studies have shown that there is more atelectasis or lung collapse that occurs when people are breathing in through their mouth. And that might be due to the volume of mouth breathing versus nasal breathing.
So the amount of air that you take in is probably greater if you breathe through your nose, you're saying?
Well, it's actually greater if you breathe through your mouth.
Okay.
But your nose has a valve-like function where it narrows the amount of air that actually gets in, and that's actually seen as beneficial for the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
So as anyone knows with using something called an incentive spirometer.
Yes.
When we have patients, as you know very well.
They go for surgery and we hand them this little, you know, machine with a ball that goes up in the air as they breathe in.
Exactly. And having some resistance to breathing, which the nose structures provide, actually can stent the lungs open and improve oxygenation in the blood.
Mm-hmm. So through that pressure gradient that occurs in the nasal passages, it helps keep the airways open throughout the lung.
Correct.
Understood. Okay. Cool. Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. I have a question to ask you.
Of course.
Something that probably we should have discussed before we actually sat down and did this. But many times in the gym, I see people walking around with these like respirators, like these mimicking high altitude. What do you think of that during exercise? What do you think of people who do that? Or do you think it helps with exercise? Does it help with exercise tolerance, endurance?
You know, I know that I've seen some studies on exercise physiology where they create oxygen deprivation experiences. And the theory is that by training with a mask like that, that limits your airflow and mimics a higher altitude scenario, you end up making more red blood cells in your bone marrow and end up actually creating more oxygen carrying capacity in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that you could then apply that model to someone, let's say, who has a very, very tight nasal passage, who's trying to breathe well and train even with a really tight passage. If they're able to achieve full training and athletic potential with that tight passage, maybe they create more oxygen carrying capacity. I don't know the studies, but it's an interesting point.
Yeah, no, it was kind of cool because periodically I see people running around, you know, the gym, and I was wondering what happened to our video. Anyway, we have my wonderful assistant PR person here videoing us, and apparently it died in the middle of this podcast. So we'll continue without it. So anyway,
I have more of a face for radio, anyways.
No. So anyway, getting back to our topic of the day, we have people that have very narrowed nasal passages, people who have septal deviation, nasal septal deviation. What do people do in that situation? What, you know, you're an ENT. People come to you with these problems, and they want to breathe better not only during exercise but just during life. So what can you do for them?
So before we even talk about that, I mean, what a good thing to realize is what are the signs and symptoms of mm-hmm. having, trouble breathing through your nose? So they may not be just the obvious, oh, I can't breathe through my nose. I'm a mouth breather. It may be poor sleep quality. They wake up in the morning. They're not feeling very rested. Their significant other may tell them that they're snoring like a motorboat. And another interesting issue is people who tend to get very hoarse very easily. I may be one of those people as well, but one of the reasons can be inability to breathe through the nose and humidify the air actually can lead to vocal cord drying out. So mm-hmm. hoarseness and the other, you know, the symptoms of just not being able to suck in enough air through your nose. So what we tend to do is, first of all, a really good physical exam. You want to realize where the area of the highest resistance is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it in the nose? Is it somewhere along the upper aerodigestive tract in the back of the throat? Or even deeper down, do they have a tracheal issue? So a good exam by someone who knows what they're doing, mm-hmm. essentially. Then we use tools in the office that an ENT office, you know, may look like a medieval torture device. We use something called a flexible scope.
Mm-hmm.
We numb the nose, we put in this thin fiber optic camera, and we look at several levels in the upper airway to see where the narrowing is,
mm-hmm.
right? Once we've identified it as not a throat problem or some other issue, and an aside is that a lot of people with snoring may have obstructive sleep apnea mm-hmm. or sleep apnea, as many people know, and that is a whole kind of a bigger issue.
It's a different animal than what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Here. That has to do more so with the soft tissue around the nasopharynx, whereas with you're talking more of the nasal passages.
Correct, and can be even deeper down in apnea. But let's say you have a nasal issue, it's been identified by an ENT doctor, then there's different types. So everyone's heard of the septum, a deviated septum. The middle wall of their nose separating the two sides will have a deviation, meaning it'll be angled towards one side or both sides and closing off the nasal passage.
How do you end up with that? Is it something from trauma? Is that like you're born with it? How do people end up with a deviated septum?
So it's typically one of those unwanted side effects from puberty. As we know, there are many of those, but a deviated septum is one of them. And what happens is the bone of the nose on the bottom of the nose can actually grow and bend the cartilage that's growing on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just sort of faulty growth.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be from trauma, taking too many punches, a head-on collision leading to your head bumping the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And also from botched nasal surgery, we see a lot of people with, you know, had surgery and now they're left with inability to breathe, even though their nose looks pretty.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see that in South Florida, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Plenty of it, especially on South Beach.
Yes.
So what does nasal surgery not fix? I mean, you know, you can do a lot with the nose, but what can you not expect from nasal surgery?
So nasal surgery is only right in people with the proper expectation. So first, what I do is I always try some kind of medical therapy. If they've got not just a deviated septum, but they've got something called enlarged turbinates. Now, the turbinates are these two little bony structures covered in a little skin lining that can be swollen, and they can swell from allergies. They can swell from just being born with big turbinates. We treat them with some medication,
mm-hmm.
and the medication can sometimes shrink down the size of the turbinates.
Mm-hmm.
If the medication alone is not enough to shrink them down entirely, then we talk about surgery. So nasal surgery is really good at fixing the inability to breathe through the nose and snoring that's caused by nasal blockage.
Cool.
So if the patient actually has obstructive sleep apnea, then that's not going to fix it because that's a problem at multiple layers, multiple levels of the upper airway. But and another thing is if they've got really bad snoring and the snoring is from the soft palate or the uvula, the part that hangs down in the back of the mouth, nasal surgery is not going to help that person.
I can only imagine. It's funny. A number of years ago when I was early married, because I'd snored, I went to an ENT who at that point in time suggested that I get my uvula removed. Yes, I actually did have it done. They snipped my uvula, that little piece of skin in the back of the throat. Probably one of the most painful things I've ever done in my entire life. In fact, actually, I think I lost like 20 pounds in like 2 weeks because I couldn't eat. But to this day, I still do snore. So just throwing it out there, this type of surgery or any type of surgery, you need to really be careful and find out what the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives, and make sure that it's appropriate for you, and not just order an online nasal surgery kit and do it at your home.
There's a lot of bad surgery out there, or you know,
and there's a lot of good surgery out there.
Exactly.
So obviously, do your homework. Find a provider that you understand. They understand you, what your needs are, and what your condition is, and with that, you can hopefully get a wonderful, amazing, incredible result. And that's really it. That's nasal surgery in a nutshell.
There you go.
Dr. Gorman, thank you so much for coming today. I really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure. And with that, this is Dr. Adam Splaver, and this is Warrior Health.